to another edition of Barrel to Bottle with Binny's Beverage Depot. I'm your esteemed host, Kristen Ellis. As always is Jeff Carlin.
Welcome. This is the third installment of our Barrel to Bottle on the Road, where we checked out all things whiskey. We started off with none other than Jimmy and Eddie Russell. And then you heard last week our Bourbon Women podcast, which was a lot of fun to get some insight into the world of bourbon, according to women.
Yes, which is always the better view.
As we learn, scientifically and evolutionarily speaking.
Yes. And then the third installment, World of Whiskies, which is just an all-out blowout of everything spirits. It was a really great time. World of Whiskies has been around since 2004.
Talked a little bit about this when we were talking about the Jimmy Russell interview we did, but this whiskey event, 200-plus whiskeys.
Well, I think, more importantly, I don't want to overshadow World of Whiskies, but we debuted Barrel to Bottle on the road. That's kind of what we were doing there, is to sort of take what we do, bring it out there to show everybody what we could do on the road. So that's what we did. So World of Whiskies, amazing tasting, takes place during Whiskey Week here in Chicago, and we run it generally in two phases. The first phase, where some of the interviews are from, is from our trade portion. So for our listeners that are in the business, you come earlier in the afternoon. That gives you a bit more freedom, a bit more room to kind of talk to the producers and hang out with the Al Youngs, the Jimmy Russells of the world, just to throw out a few fantastic names.
I'll pick those names off the floor for you.
I'm kind of name dropping for a table here. So, and then we take a break, and then, we have the customer portion later on. It's more recreational, of course. And you'll notice the difference in the interviews, because the ones that we do in the evening are just a lot louder. The background is because there's like five times more people there. So we pull something like 1,000 people for the day.
Yeah, it's a ticketed event for the public portion of it, which is amazing because the line is around the block. So this is kind of just a tour of the different distillers, people of note, things we thought were really interesting. If you couldn't make it out this year, you can tune into us, obviously,
and we'll take you on a tour. Exactly, just a taste of what we have to offer at World of Whiskies. So to kick things off, Jeff Wright, I think we're going to go all the way up north, as they say.
North.
To Far North Spirits up in Halleck, Minnesota. So that's 20 miles south of Canada. Now, I grew up in Minneapolis, but one thing you'll hear in this interview is how much better he is at the Minnesota accent than I am. So anyway, Johnny Barboza, cool dude up in Halleck, Minnesota. So it's tropical up there. Yeah. And so we talked about kind of their rye experimentation, and that's what they're known for. They got a huge grant from the University of Minnesota to experiment with all these different varieties of rye to see kind of what made the best whiskey, talking about complexity, talking about blending. That was pretty, pretty cool what they're doing with those rye varieties up there, especially with their corn. So without further ado, Johnny Barboza from Far North Spirits.
So we're here with John Barboza from Far North Spirits out of Minnesota. And you know, Jeff, I'm a Minnesota girl. I grew up in Minneapolis.
I know, I heard that. So this is perfect for you because this is right up your alley, your hometown.
It is. It's close to my hometown, that's for sure.
Home turf,
that's right. Well, but then I'm also a Packers fan. So when you say home turf, I think frozen tundra.
Oh, no.
And I'm so conflicted. I need more whiskey to calm me down. I'm hysterical. So, Johnny Barboza, thanks for coming.
It's my pleasure to be here. It's great to be in Chicago where it's warm, where it's actually over 32 degrees.
Only from someone from Minneapolis would say Chicago's warmer in the winter.
I think that's awesome. This is like a little kind of spring break for you down here in Chicago.
It's t-shirt weather, and it really is.
So tell me about making spirits in Minnesota.
Sure. So we're located in Halleck, Minnesota, where it's literally 20 miles south of Canada, 10 miles east of North Dakota, so the northwest corner. We're located in the Red River Valley. There used to be an old glacial lake called Lake Agassiz, which left a lot of rich deposits of soil. The soil's so black, it's almost as black as your shirt. And so it's prime farming area. We're a farm distillery. We're 1,500 acres where we grow a specific rye variety called AC Hazlitt. It's a Canadian variety that's non-GMO. And so we plant it in the fall, goes dormant in the winter, where it survives 30, 40 below, then we harvest it in the summer. We also grow corn, an heirloom variety of corn. It grows 77 days because we have such a short growing period. Then we mill it, distill it all in-house, and we use Minnesota barrels. So they're coopers within 150 miles of the distillery with Minnesota oak.
Awesome.
And so our barrel room is on the north end of the distillery. It's non-insulated. So we'll have temperatures just fluctuations from 90 degrees during the summer to 30, 40 below during the winter.
That's too harsh continental climate.
It is harsh.
So what does that mean for you in terms of longevity? Do you have to age your spirits longer than maybe somebody down in Bardstown just because you're dealing with such cold?
Actually, the extremes really help us.
Okay.
In terms of with the heat, you get the, you know, the expansion and the contraction of the oak. So it actually really does penetrate the oak really nicely. So we're seeing, especially with, we just released the bourbon, normal bourbon time for what the barrels that we use is generally about 18 to 24 months.
Okay.
Because of the expanding and contracting of the heat and the cold, we were able to pull that at 18 months, and it's absolutely beautiful.
Wow, that's awesome. And I hear, Johnny, that you're the guy that's experimenting with rye.
So we are experimenting with rye. What we have here today, we have our Minnesota rye, which is 80% rye, 10% corn, 10% malt barley, aged in New American oak, once again, Minnesota oak. Once it's done aging, we finish in cognac. Then I have the same one, same mash bill, but instead of being finished in cognac, we finish in Sauternes. And we have a Maryland-style rye, which is George Washington's original recipe. So 65 rye, 25 corn, 10 malt barley. And we also have a 100% rye, 95 rye, and 5% malted rye. But as well, we partnered with the University of Minnesota. We got a grant of $188,000 to do a three-year rye study where we're growing 18 different varieties with the ultimate goal is to have this matrix of the different varieties so we know what their flavor profiles are. So that way we can present it to distillers and brewers, say if you want this specific flavor, you want somebody to grow this kind of rye.
That's awesome.
That's really amazing. I've never heard of something like that. I mean, that must be one of a kind.
With rye, we think it is. We've done the research and we haven't found anything like that. But in terms of corn, in terms of wheat and barley, it's been done.
Sure.
So it might be proprietary, but we want to make it public.
Yeah, make it open source, as they say.
Yep.
I have a really important question.
Sure.
What spirit out of your product range pairs best with hot dish?
Oh, with hot dish.
Do you even know what that is?
I have no idea what that is.
Hot dish, I'm not from Minnesota. My wife's originally from Minnesota. So we moved back there three and a half years ago. So this is all cultural shift. Hot dish is kind of like a casserole, but hot dish is specific to Minnesota.
Yeah.
My mother-in-law makes this killer tater tot hot dish, makes this killer pizza hot dish, and it's just like pizza in a casserole dish baked, and it's just amazing. In terms of pizza hot dish, I would say our Sauternes finish because you get the sweetness.
Yeah.
And so when you pair it with a good pepperoni, it's really nice. In terms of tater tot hot dish, I would say our Maryland-sized rye is really nice. You get a little bit of the sweetness, but you get a little bit more of that earthy flavor from the rye.
I love how serious you took that.
Oh, yeah, that turned in a hurry.
Yeah.
That was very scientific. I mean, you were on the point there.
We talk about hot dish a lot in my household, so I'm happy to have you here, and that's great. I look forward to tasting through your products. Thanks for coming.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So it's really cold up there. Apparently, their growing season is like 77 days long. Can you imagine?
It's not even enough time to get your tan on.
Well, what's seasonal depression order like up in Halleck, Minnesota?
Yeah, it's seasonal non-depression. That's what it is. They have the inverse.
Well, they've got Far North Spirits. I think that's kind of the cure. You know, it's like you can keep the Wellbutrin. I'll take the Far North Spirits. That's what I'm about.
But it was a really cool conversation with him because the idea of figuring out and using the science to determine which is the best grain for getting the best profile or different flavor profiles. A lot of people focus on just the mix, the rye versus corn and wheat and all that. And then the barrel they put it in, like that's what everybody kind of thinks of. They don't really necessarily think about different types of rye or different types of corn.
It's not only the different types of rye, but it's what is the best for Minnesota.
Right.
Which is cool because every time we're talking about, you know, rye or bourbon, we're looking south.
Mm-hmm.
And now this time we're looking north. Even as far north as we are, we're still looking up there.
Yeah, right.
And so I think that that's really, really cool. It's kind of putting Minnesota on the map. It's awesome.
Yeah. And it's one of those things, like I said, everybody thinks about Kentucky or they think about Tennessee for whiskeys, Minnesota when it doesn't come to mind. But you know what does come to mind? Illinois now. I mean, there's a distillery in Illinois who's doing some good stuff.
Oppidan Spirits out in Wheeling. So we got to talk to Jeff Walsh. I love their product and I've really liked for a couple of years now their Solera. bourbon offering. So that expression is aged. They take the name Solera that comes from sherry in Spain, and sherry's a wine that's aged fractionally, which means it's a blend of many different barrels that end up in that final bottling, and that's kind of what they're doing. It's a play on that. It's not as fractional. It doesn't take as long. It's not as intricate as they do in sherry, but more or less the concept is still the same. So their Solera bourbon is killer, and we tasted that together, and then they took a riff off of that recipe of theirs, and they finished it in an Islay barrel.
As I like to say, Islay.
I hated it when you did that. I yelled. I think that was the only time I ever yelled at you in our work relationship.
Yeah, so they kept saying, because Roger had a bottle of
the Goose Island Islay,
and I was like, oh, give me some more of that Islay.
And I was like, no!
I almost slapped it out of my hand.
I levitated. I was so mad.
But these guys, this is really good. The whiskey tones that we are used to, the bourbon barrels and beers here, it's different. This is a much a more complex flavor profile.
Well, it adds that kiss of peat, right? Mm-hmm. And peat, I don't like it. I don't like peaty scotches. I'm not a big fan of Ardbeg unless it's mixed in a Bloody Mary, apparently. Like, I just don't. It's never been my thing, and I just don't care. But the way that it played well with kind of that sweetness, that Christmas cakey, you know, sort of expression in the bourbon, I really made for a very interesting, very well put together spirit. So that finish for me was the right time. It wasn't too little. It wasn't too much. It wasn't overpowering. It just sort of picked it up and gave it lift. And that's what I really enjoyed about that expression.
Absolutely. So let's let Jeff tell us some. Jeff Walsh, not Jeff, man.
He's a good guy.
Tell us a little bit more about one of Illinois' very own.
All right. I'm here with Jeff Walsh from Opiden. Hey, Jeff. How are you?
Very good. How are you?
Good. Thanks for coming back to World of Whiskies.
Oh, it's always fun.
Is this your third time with us at this tasting?
This is my third or fourth.
Okay, good. So you're kind of becoming a household name here at Binney's Beverage Depot.
Well, I'd like to think so. I'm proud of what I do, and I hope everybody enjoys the product.
We do not mind. So I want to talk about a couple of things. Before we get into your new products here, I want to talk about Solera, right?
Sure.
One of my favorites that you do. I think that Solera might be a confusing term. Can you explain to our listeners what Solera aging is all about?
I would say most traditionally we're seeing this technique being used in the sherry industry, and then you see it used in the rum industry. You don't see it used very much in the whiskey industry. In this case, on our Solera aged bourbon, it's a 5-grain mash bill. You're looking at corn, malted rye, chocolate malted rye, special B in 2 rows. So kind of already the craft brewer's approach on the mash bill, then aged in American oak, then French oak, then Oloroso sherry cask. In this case, the Solera comes in that the French oak and the Oloroso cask never drop below half before the next batch moves onto it and goes down the line. So in sherry, it's the same thing. You'll see some cool sherries where it says like aging since 1918. Because some amount of batch one is always in there. We did it in this case as a newer distillery. How do you, one, create complexity, and two, how do you have continuity as you go from smaller barrels to, at this point, we only lay down full-size casks. When you were, originally we were in 15-gallon barrels on that for just over a year before going into full-size French oak, then into Oloroso casks. You were looking at total age originally around 2 years. Now it's, you know, the blend at this point is averaging probably more around 4. The youngest part is going more like 3 years, and then the oldest part, it's still there from where it started 5 years ago.
Cool. It's delicious. I love it.
Thank you.
But you've got something new on the table today.
I do indeed. So this was stealing a little bit from our Solera. So we took 5 barrels, 4 of which were from our Solera, and 1 of which was coming from our forthcoming 4-grain bourbon. Then we took it and we dumped it into Islay Scotch barrels. So this was following on, we did a few bottlings, one of which was a Delilah's single cask, where we took our malted rye and it went into an Islay Scotch barrel. It was very well received. It was a lot of fun to play with. I asked Mike Miller at Delilah's, well, what do you think about doing that with bourbon? And he's like, well, why are you asking the question? You know, I'm going to like the idea. I was like, yeah, I agree. So we brought in 5 barrels to just do it as big as we were willing to steal from our Solera without running into problems. And I think it's really cool. You get all the traditional bourbon notes plus the non-traditional that come in our Solera from that chocolate malted rye and the special bee. But then you're getting that iodine and peat in a more subtle way than you see on some of the other ones in the market. It's more on the finish. Now you have that lingering peat, and it just, I think it adds a cool note. If you're not a Scotch fan, you might not like it, but it's subtle enough that you can say, I know I'm not a huge peat fan, that you still might like it too. So it adds a cool, complex note, and it's been a lot of fun.
Well, that's exactly what I said. I'm not a fan of peat, but when I tasted it, I was like, this is perfect. It really is such a great little note on the end.
Just subtle enough.
It's perfect.
Nice.
I don't really like to kiss peat, but today I will.
There you
if
go.
If it's opident, I'll kiss it.
There you
it.
Go.
Yeah,
perfect.
Sure. Thanks, Jeff. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Hey, Jeff, do you know when you've had a long day in the studio, and you're hanging out with Ro, and you're hanging in WGN, what time do you get home normally? You get home kind of late, like 10 at night?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, okay. That's not too. It's like bartender late.
Right, not bartender
but,
tender late.
But it's still late. And do you ever come home and you just like, you wish you had a cocktail, but you don't want to make it?
Yes, all the time.
So you have cocktail problems,
I
right?
do.
Speaking of bartender late, I got to interview world famous Charles Jolie. I get a little bit kind of nervous with some people with these interviews and things. Most of the time I can play it off as pretty cool because I talked to them beforehand, but I didn't get a chance to sort of
pre-interview
exactly and just like whatever. So I walk up to Charles and first I'm just like, hello, the best bartender alive, you know. But he's so sweet, so nice, so very well spoken. Yeah, we got to talk about his craft house cocktails. Craft house basically is, as far as I'm concerned, in the pre-mixed cocktail world, one of the best products you can buy, just because, well, not only because he sources from Chicago, I mean, it's pretty sweet, but he's using CH Distillery, but very high, you know, high-end, well-made, ready-to-drink spirits and cocktails that are just fantastic.
Yeah.
So just ice in a glass and pour and go, and you got Charles Jolie literally in your living room.
And for those who don't know, Jolie, I mean, he's, like you said, he is a legend, but he's got his background in...
He was the beverage director at Aviary.
Mm-hmm, which,
so, I mean, okay.
Yeah.
Right? So we're relating it to Alinea and that whole family mm-hmm. now. If Grant A. Katz is like, dude, run my beverage program, then you pretty much know you've made it. Like,
yeah.
He could have hung it up at that point.
Absolutely.
But he didn't because, you know, he's hungry for more. He does the cocktail program for the Emmys and a lot of award shows. He basically is the guy for the Kentucky Derby. Everybody who knows anything about anything is looking at Charles Jolie to make their cocktails if they can get them.
I'm here with Charles Jolie. Hey, Charles, how are you?
I'm fantastic. Thanks so much.
We really appreciate you coming to World of Whiskies and participating in Barrel to Bottle with Binney's Beverage Depot. So tell us what you're doing here at World of Whiskies.
Cool. I'm here with my bottle cocktail line, Craft House Cocktails. We're a Chicago-based company, all natural, fully prepared cocktails made with excellent spirits, stuff that I would use even if we didn't have it prepared in the bottle for you. We work with great local distilleries, CH Distillery right down the street. From here makes our vodka and our gin. Traverse City makes our bourbon for us. And we have a tequila cocktail as well, which is a beautiful Blanco from Tequila Town.
Awesome. And if people don't know you, they might be able to find you where around town? If they're not drinking Craft House, where can we see you in Chicago?
So I've been behind the bar for 20 years now, and the last couple I've been working independently. So my very last gig, I was a beverage director at the Aviary in Chicago. But now I work on all sorts of big events. We just wrapped up the Academy Awards. I designed the specialty cocktails for that over the last few years. I do the awards for the Emmys and the specialty cocktails there. I'll be down at the Kentucky Derby. I've done that the last few years, creating the signature cocktails. So that's we're definitely in the whiskey mood, and so that's fitting and really just around the corner. I'm doing all sorts of events. Craft House pops up at all sorts of charity events. We pour a lot of cocktails there. I'm just kind of working on a lot of those fun projects right now. I'm not full-time behind the bar at the moment.
So has your schedule changed yourself? I mean, you used to probably work a lot of late nights. Are you a little bit more on the other side now that you've kind of jumped to the supplier side more or less of the business?
I am both vampire and daywalker.
Oh, man.
So I do both because I'm out bartending parties and events and things like that. But then I'm also, I get to see a whole different side of the business dealing with having essentially what's a spirit brand. It works exact same way. And so it's fun, though. But, I get to come out here. I was excited for this. Obviously, a lot of friends here pouring whiskey. And so it's a very small community, not even just in Chicago, but globally. We all kind of know one another in the business. And it's a pretty pretty fun business to get to know everyone in.
That's great. Well, besides Chicago, where's your favorite place to travel for cocktails outside of the United States?
Ooh, man, that's a very
top
a good question.
Top three. Maybe.
I would say Edinburgh, Scotland, is excellent, and you know, you obviously they're known for their whiskey up that way. But it's just an incredible city and has a really fun and vibrant cocktail culture. I think one of the most underrated is Mexico City. You're only a four-hour flight away from Chicago to get to Mexico City, and I think it is a city that they certainly know that they are a world-class city. Arts, food, spirits and beverage, all of it, entertainment. It's so vibrant, so much fun, and there's a lot of cool underground stuff happening there, and it's really easy to get to. So I say skip Playa del Carmen, skip Cancun, get into the heart of Mexico, and check that out. And then beyond there, I think like another sleeper where I've had a lot of fun is like when you get into the Mediterranean, everywhere from Athens to Tel Aviv to Beirut. I mean, there's like this is the cocktail movement is not only isolated to London and New York and you know Los Angeles. This is every city all around the world that it's reached to now, and it's not just about this niche bartender thing. It is about people are making cocktails at home. They're entertaining more and more. Nobody has a wedding or a party that without a specialty cocktail. And so it's really a fun time to be a bartender, and it's been amazing to watch it grow over the last decade or so.
Well, congratulations for your success with Craft House.
Oh, thank you so much.
I love the product because sometimes, you know, I come home late at night, not as late as you maybe, but it's just great to have something that's ready to rock, poured over ice, and, you know, I'm chilled out. So I appreciate it, and I think we all do too. We'll see you for continuing education and some other events at Benny's down the line.
Yeah, I look forward to it.
We hope so. Thanks so much.
All right, thanks.
So there you have it, Charles Jolie. I mean, just a lovely guy. But what a good idea. I have to actually take it back. It's the pre-made cocktail has been around for a long time, since, you know, much longer than I've been legal to drink, to consume alcohol in the United States.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you come along with something and you just take an idea that's already there and you improve on it so much and you make it so accessible, and then you've got a guy that's so nice and cool and then also is the brand itself, like, that's a recipe for success. All right. So I needed a break, so I went to go eat some oysters, and you took the reins on the next interview, which is Lorna Rumley from Glendalough over in Dublin.
Oh my God. First of all, she was the best accent of the night. I mean, Minnesota was good, but we went international.
I'm not getting on your train, buddy. Minnesota. Choo-choo.
Yeah, choo-choo. I mean, they're close to Canada, but Lorna was international, so that was very cool. Glendalough.
Yes, the exotic Dublin, Jeff. Yes,
exactly.
Yes,
that's right, international. Hey, you have to cross a large ocean to get there.
Yeah, for sure. But I didn't get a chance to interview, but I listened to the interview, and she talks about a product that was, you know, going back to 500 AD.
Yeah.
And that is an Irish whiskey coming out of a poitchine still. So they call it poitchine.
Right.
And I guess it used to be illegal. Now, I wish I could have spoken to her. I'm going to get her email because I wonder how any whiskey is ever illegal in Ireland.
Right, that's oxymoronic.
Well, yeah, what does that mean?
Whiskey illegal.
Yeah, like, and then who stops you? What's the penalty?
Right. What off with your
sobriety?
Hand. Sobriety? Yeah, right, there you go. But it was really cool, and the whiskey itself is clear, and it's not necessarily, it doesn't have the whiskey profile you would think. It was almost closer to like a brandy. Like, it was a little sweeter.
Yes,
still had a lot of heat on it.
It was made with 20% beet sugar distillate.
Right, which was pretty cool.
That's going to give you that kind of roundness, that viscosity, and that sweetness. Mm-hmm. I'm guessing.
No, absolutely.
I didn't get a chance to taste it, but yeah. But yeah, so now it's legal, so now they're making it.
They're bringing it back.
One of just a very few producers in the country that are bringing back the poitchine. And then they also did, the other product was one of the first Irish to be finished in a Japanese cask.
Yeah.
So they're messing around over there at Glendalough Distillery. They're killing it.
They are. Some unique stuff. So here is Lorna from Glendalough.
Lovely Lorna.
So tell me who you are and why your whiskey's unique.
I'm Lorna. I work with the Glendalough Distillery based out of County Wicklow in our south of Dublin. We have two special single malts that we just brought into the market here in Chicago. Our 7-year-old single malt is actually finished in Porter Pitts casks from Dublin Brewery. And our 13-year-old single malt is the first Irish whiskey to be finished off in Japanese Mizunara oak casks.
And so earlier I was trying this, and I'm gonna murder the pronunciation of it. But poitchine?
It's actually poitchine, so it's an Irish word for little pot or a pot still, which is distilled in. So it's actually an ancient ancestor of Irish whiskey, dates back to like 500 AD, was distilled by monks in ancient monk settlements in areas like Glendalough. So 80% malted barley, 20% sugar beets. It's stored in virgin Irish oak. It's actually 120 proof. So it's really wild and different.
And I tasted it earlier, and it's unlike anything I've ever tried. I mean, it's got some really unique flavors to it. And did you say beets in there? Is that what it is, sugar beets?
Yeah, so sugar beets and malted barley. So you get a really sweet and sour flavor profile, great for cocktails.
That's incredible. So that's something that's new. I mean, I haven't seen that anywhere else.
Yeah, it's we're one of the first distilleries to bring it back in as a legal spirit. It was actually illegal many years ago, and it was only brought in as a legal spirit back in 1997, and Glendalough Distillery is one of the first distilleries to make it a legal spirit. So.
Wow, that's awesome. Well, thank you so much for your time.
You're welcome. Thank you.
So it's called World of Whiskies.
And we hit the world.
We did, but there's a brandy producer in-house.
Wait a minute. Explain that to me.
Well, so Dan Farber, he owns Osicalis Brandy down near San Francisco, just south of San Francisco in California. Probably one of the smartest people, like presidential smart kind of thing.
Yes.
I think it's cool because he's been collecting whiskey since the 80s. He talks about the difficulty of blending because it is difficult. I mean, everyone knows like champagne is no secret. I think about what is called the assemblage portion of making a champagne, and you've got, you know, 100 different lots to blend together to make one product. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times these houses are trying to make consistency. So that's the same kind of thing with whiskey. So I think Dan Farber, coming from brandy, he's coming from a grape derivative, and then he's also really, really deep in the whiskey world. So he's kind of bringing those two houses mm-hmm. together to talk about complexity and nuance in the art of blending.
Certainly, and an authority on blending, to say the least. So
absolutely, amongst other things.
Right.
Yes.
Absolutely. So here's Dan Farber.
Dan Farber, ladies and gentlemen.
Okay, I'm here with Dan Farber from Osicalis Brandy. Hey, Dan, how are you?
Good, how are you?
I'm awesome. It's World of Whiskies, so I couldn't be better. You've been here a few times now. I think this is our 7th or 8th year. Have you been here every single year?
No, but I have been here for the last 4 or so years. And I participate in this and then some events that are around it. And really, it's a great opportunity. Although I'm a brandy producer and I don't produce any whiskey, I have been interested in whiskey since I was a boy, and actually have collected whiskey since the early 1980s. So I've always had an interest in whiskey. And I do think that ultimately, even though what I do is not whiskey, it's brandy and it's fruit-based, that the people who understand a bit about whiskey and understand the diversity of whiskey and the varieties of whiskeys will ultimately be a consumer who will be attracted to and understanding of brandies. It's really a matter of showing them the differences in style, production techniques, and what we're trying to accomplish. But I really think that that's a very fertile ground for consumers of brandy. So it's really fun to be able to be here and show them something that they are absolutely positively not interested in at all.
Well, they're not expecting it, but they're pleasantly surprised.
Usually, yeah. They either don't know anything about brandy and are pleasantly surprised, or know something about brandy, but certainly not about classically produced brandies from the United States, because there's so few of us.
Right, right. So do you think that brandy's kind of on an upswing right now in terms of popularity, or where are you guys in the market? I mean, bourbon is hot, but where's brandy?
So, since I thought brandy was going to be on an upswing 30 years ago, I don't want to doom the industry to, like, my failed crystal ball, but indeed there is a lot more interest. There are a number of large projects coming out of California right now, brandy projects coming out of California, including, you know, wonderful spirits from Gallo. It's released some of their older liquid now with Argonaut. Francis Ford Coppola has released a new brand of brandies. There are some other projects in the work. We have some projects in the East Coast, and even our own distillery, which has been around for a few decades now, this will be the first year. Last year we stopped buying fruit from any outside sources, and this will be our first year to produce commercial volumes off of our own vineyards. So
What grapes are you growing?
We are growing in decreasing order of abundance, Folle Blanche, Pinot Noir, Montiel, Semillon, Viognier, and Folignon.
Wow. Viognier, I mean, do you ever make a brandy out of just Viognier?
Yes, we always have, and we have some Viogniers going back like quite far. It's something unique to California. It's a very, very floral brandy. If you know wines, it has that kind of very honeysuckle flower-like character to it when fermented nicely and distilled correctly. And it can add a very nice upper tone to a blend. I've never released a single varietal of Viognier. I am much more a fan of blends.
Yes.
With whiskey as well, unfortunately. I must say I'm in a small group of aficionados for blended malts.
I'm in that group.
Good.
Yeah.
You know, to me, the beauty and clarity of seeing something single or solo, like a single barrel Viognier or a single barrel Pinot Noir, it has a kind of clear character to it that is intriguing. But I don't think you ever really, this is not 100% true, but it's mostly true, that you never really get the depth and finesse and structure that you could if you could put components together. And think of it, we would never do it with perfume, right? Those that wear, 100% patchouli perfume stand out for sure,
Right. For many reasons.
for many, many reasons. And yet, if you look at many of the real elegant perfumes, there will be a base of something like patchouli or cedarwood oil or sandalwood oil or one of those, woody, earthy base notes to build that beautiful, complex perfume on top of. And in the same way, when we're blending either whiskeys, I'm here, we should really think about how these things relate together rather than not, or brandies, we're really approaching it in the same way, trying to, bring a palette of things together that can make a much more rich combination.
Yes. Well, awesome. Thank you for that insight. Thanks for participating in Barrel to Bottle.
Thank you.
Always a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much.
Jeff, you and I are standing in the middle of the tasting room, and we're kind of trying to pick our next pony for the interview.
Right.
And we get a tap on the shoulder, and he comes out from behind his barrel, and he is like, "Hi, I'm Turner Wathen. I have to be on your podcast." And I'm like, it's happening.
It's Jeff. Happening. We're famous.
Yeah. Did you hear that last name? It's a Wathen who wants to be on our podcast. Exactly. That was awesome.
That was very cool.
I got a little bit pink.
Yeah, me too. I was, I got flushed.
I was surprised, actually.
It was cool to see, we've only been doing this for, we've got 30
six
episodes.
Minutes.
Six
yeah,
minutes.
Yeah,
that
yeah,
too.
Yeah.
Everyone else there was very glad to talk to us.
Everyone
but this
else
guy was
like,
"Who?" Outright.
And he was like, "You." That, I mean, that
it was
pretty
cool. And he's got a great story, great backstory.
Yes, yes. So he is a Wathen. His great grandfather started the Old Granddad Distillery. So I love the way he talks about their rags to riches and lost it all and
right.
drank all our stock and very cute. So he knows he's got the last name, right? So he's got the nobility of birth, if you will. And so now what he's trying to do is not just take that name, but also make something else of it. So he is making high-end rum in bourbon country. That's just not the obvious thing to do. You got to think, okay, my great-grandfather started the Old Granddad Distillery. Our family name is pretty famous down here. I could very easily just fall back into the bourbon. People would buy it. I could, do all these things to just sort of make it more successful quicker, I think, if he just kind of did with the norm. But he really likes rum. So he's like, you know what? I'm going to flip it on its head. I'm going to make awesome rum in bourbon country. Very cool.
It's very unique. And coming from there, you never think of bourbon country and rum.
No, but you can now.
Yeah.
Because of Turner Wathen and Fortuitous Union.
So we're here with Turner Wathen of Fortuitous Union.
Thank you guys so much.
You have a pretty cool backstory, don't you?
Some would say I got kind of lucky with the heritage and I'm trying to bring it back. So my great-great-grandfather built the Old Granddad Distillery. We were one of a few families that could sell during Prohibition. And just like good-blooded Americans, we drank and sold ourselves out of all our assets.
Fair enough.
I've spent the past decade with my partner trying to figure out my way back into this industry. I want someone with the last name Wathen running notable brands and producing high-quality spirits. And so we are rum evangelists out of Louisville, Kentucky. We're in bourbon country, and we love rum because we want to do something different, but it's something that applies and appeals to bourbon and whiskey-centric audiences. Our first product, called Fortuitous Union, was a mistake. we were taking an older age rum, we were moving it from bourbon to port barrels when we dumped it into a dump tank that had 90 gallons of rye whiskey. So it's kind of a mix-up or F-up, which is why we call it F-U. It is a cask-strength rum that is blended with 95% rye whiskey. And the original concept was a rum that would go into used bourbon, port, and then sherry barrels. We are doing that. That will be out later on this year. But we think it's a unique story. There's only 1,600 bottles made because we can't replicate it. And we are very lucky to be here.
Is this your first World of Whiskies?
Yes.
Awesome. So how does it feel to be in the largest whiskey tasting in the Western Hemisphere?
I've spent about 5 years dreaming of something like this. Yeah. Honestly. I've known of Binny's for a long time. You all support the most knowledgeable staff, some would say, in the country. You all have a very astute whiskey and barrel pick program. And I've watched you guys for years. So the fact that I can be here today means more than you two will ever know.
Well, thank you so much, and congratulations on the success.
Well, we won't call it success yet, but we sure as hell are happy to be here.
Hey, man, you're on your way. Exactly, you're
on your way.
Thank you all.
Great to have you. Thanks so much.
Cool. So, hey, isn't that awesome? Good for him. Yeah, really super sweet story.
Great story. Keep your eye on that. A different, unique product that I think is going to be very popular.
I enjoyed
up.
That mm-hmm. very much. Cool. Coming back local.
Yeah, take it home.
Let's take it back home. We're going to finish up our interviews with two more local people. First is Victoria Fitzsimmons, and she comes to us from Quincy Street Distillery in Riverside. They are Chicago natives that started this distillery, and she's here to show kind of the other side of the product range that we offer at World of Whiskies. And she talked a lot about, you know, the barrel-aged bourbon, but also their barrel-aged gin and their Genever that's aged 12 months in rye barrels.
That was
pretty
something.
Sweet.
I loved it. I love barrel-aged gin. I mean, that's one of those things I've found recently in my life, and it is one of my favorite things, and they do a great job with it. I mean, in Riverside, Illinois is you know, just a stone's throw outside of Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And to find something like this, and she had such a passion for what she was doing. She was genuinely super excited to be talking about their little brand, if you will, because they are a younger brand in the grand scheme of things.
Right.
And they do this great gin, but they're not just that. They do, you know, they do some other things that they're really proud of. So I was excited to sit down with her for a few minutes.
It's quite a prolific product range that they have, but for me, those gins kind of were a standout. So let's talk about some rye-finished barrel-aged gin, baby.
So I'm here with
Victoria Fitzsimmons from Quincy Street Distillery.
And you guys are an Illinois center. I mean, you're born and raised here in Illinois.
Absolutely. So I grew up in Des Plaines, Mount Prospect area, lived in Lakeview for a while. Now I live in Riverside, which Quincy Street Distillery is in Riverside. So it's a very convenient commute for me.
Sure. So, and what do you, some of the unique things here, I just tried your barrel-aged gin, which was awesome. And the two different varieties, tell me a little bit about those.
So the barrel-aged gin, it's actually made from our whiskey distillate. So the base is 83% corn malt, barley, and rye. We age it we distill it in a pot still. We do a double distillation. We age it in bourbon barrels, a small 10-gallon barrel, for 9 to 13 months. The other one that we do is a Dutch-style gin. It's called a Genever. What we do is we age it in a one year in the barrel, a rye barrel, and that base is 100% malted barley, and we have winter botanicals infused in that batch.
And you guys are right here in the Chicago area. Where's the location again?
So it's in Riverside, so it's just south of Oak Park, east of the Brookfield Zoo. So it's in the western suburbs area.
And what else, you guys? What's else your signature for you as a distillery?
So we also have a couple different style bourbons, a couple different unaged corn whiskeys, artisanal cinnamon whiskey, artisanal vodka, and we also have single malt whiskey, and we have, some brandy and honey spirit.
Awesome. And what's the history behind the distillery? I mean, how did it get started?
So the distillery got started because our owner originally wanted to open a distillery in southwestern Michigan. He could not find a property, but he has lived in Riverside for 25 years. The space opened up. He was like, I'm going to open a distillery here. So we started off with a four-month bourbon and a gin that was not aged. And over these 6 years, because Illinois is very new in craft distilling, we have certainly expanded. So now we have over 16 different products We have distribution all over. We offer tours, full cocktail bar. So, yeah, it's been awesome.
Excellent. Well, thanks so much for your time.
Well, she's a wealth of knowledge, and I'm happy to have her as a local producer here.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Someone
that makes you happy to know and have met, and really good gin. I love gin.
Ginny gin,
exactly. Can we say that? We just did.
Yeah.
And we're taking it home. We're staying local. Our good buddy from Goose Island, Mike Siegel, came in. You guys maybe heard him with our Bourbon County Stout podcast. He is the research and development manager over at Goose Island, and he was there doing a little Mission Recon bourbon barrel.
You know? He was like a kid in a candy shop running through there. Every time you saw him, there was a big smile on his face, and he was, I just tried this. Oh, my God. I just tried that. Oh, my God. Did you see that?
I love that guy, man.
I know.
And Pat Brophy came in and he sort of bombed the interview with Siegel, but that's what he does.
Absolutely.
That's what he does. He bombs. Kidding. Love Pat. So anyway, you guys, here's Mike Siegel talking about what it's like to be an R&D guy, beer guy, at a whiskey tasting.
Jeff, look who we found.
Oh, my God.
It's Mike Siegel from Goose Island. How you doing?
Great to be here, guys.
Oh,
doing great.
Man.
How are you?
We just can't get enough of you.
Yeah, it's my first World of Whiskey, so.
Really?
Yeah.
Are you surviving so far?
I think I'm doing all right. Thank God it ends at 4. So.
What standouts so far?
I just had the Compass Box. I can't remember the name, but it's basically a blend of the Ardbegs. 14-year-old Ardbeg and some others. You can't go wrong with... I'm trying to taste some new stuff, but also the Angel's Envy Barrel Proof was very nice and... You know, kind of coming out from the shadows. Really just trying to get a nice, you know, Pat's been kind of guiding me down the right path.
Mr. Brophy
here, so.
He is the guide of all guides.
But yeah.
Plus, he's so white, he basically glows in the dark. Can we say that on the podcast?
I think you just did.
I'm not white, I'm clear.
Yeah. So, translucent.
I'm not quite novice, but I'm in that camp of like, very exploratory. I'm a bourbon lover, whiskey lover, but not one that has a huge amount of knowledge. And since we use a lot of barrels, I feel like this is proper R&D here.
Absolutely.
I've actually given a couple cards out, and hopefully we can work with some of these distilleries in the future.
Cool.
So,
yeah.
Get some barrels with.
Network it up, man.
Yeah.
Awesome.
So,
that's what it's all about.
Yeah.
Thanks for stopping and chatting again.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hopefully we'll see you for another podcast down the line.
Please.
Absolutely.
Thanks,
Mike. Invite me and I'll be there. Thank you.
Absolutely. Ciao.
And that is it, ladies and gentlemen. So I hope that you've enjoyed your interviews here. We took a tasting that's been around since 2004. We talked to as many people as we could and tried to give you a little bit of everything. The typical whiskey, American whiskey, the Kentuckians, you know, all the way up in Minnesota, all the way over in Ireland, and then right here in the sweet home Chicago.
Yeah.
So,
and
pretty
from,
cool, man.
From not
good.
Just whiskeys. I mean, we saw there was some brandy knowledge laid on us. There
That's
was
right.
some rum knowledge, some gin tasting. I mean, it was a lot to take in, and literally this is just a dipping your toe in the whiskey barrel of World of Whiskeys.
Exactly. Way to bring it home.
I
That's
try.
Cool. Yeah, I'd rather dip my face, but whatever.
You're right. Dip my cup and take it in, but
let's bob for apples and whiskey barrels, man.
Why is no one doing that?
That would be cool.
Probably
it'd be expensive. Let's see what Turner Wathen will say.
Yeah,
he'll let us do it.
I'm sure he'll
let
would.
Us
He's
do
a
it.
Fan.
The alcohol will take all the germs away.
Yeah,
just
something
pop
like that
barrel.
There you go. Well, it is that time in our podcast where we have to...
It's time for our customer Q&A.
It is that
time. Our World of Whiskeys edition of the customer Q&A. So folks, write into us at Benny's Bev on Twitter. You can win a $20 gift card if we pick your question. What we did, though, for World of Whiskeys and Bourbon Women is we just fielded questions and had people write them down. So we've got Kathleen Hoppy. I hope I'm saying that right. I think I am. Kathleen Hoppy. She asks, what is your favorite non-peat single malt scotch under $100? So we've got a couple. First, we like the Edredower. It is a Signatory bottling. It's 11 years old, finished in Sauterne cast. What's cool about Edredower is they are the smallest distillery in Scotland. They use the smallest stills, rather. So the type of distillate that they make is kind of oily, has a lot of body. It's not like gross oily, but it just adds a nice viscosity to it. And the sweet kind of ripe flavor of the Sauterne finish, it just is a match made in heaven. So Edredower Sauterne finish, bottled by Signatory. It's 11-year-old single malt scotch. And we also like the Glenfarclas 12. It's kind of an overlooked, kind of an unsung hero. Mm-hmm. If you like the Macallan, but you can't spend $225,
right,
come on in and get this cherry-aged, chewy, ooh, round, unctuous Glenfarclas 12-year single malt. It is delicious.
Say.
Most of these names of the distilleries are actually quite fun to say. So as a wordsmith like you, I can see why you like that. So, Kathleen, thanks for writing in. $20 coming to you. I hope that you enjoy. Go get yourself some Edradour or some Glenfarclas.
And we have one more, but this was a kind of a give me.
Well, there's another one, a guy called Tom. Ooh, man, hold on.
Tom,
yeah, we have a Q&A 2.0 here, Jeff. It's Tom Parenhog.
Sure.
I hope.
Sounds about right.
His email, though, is Dr. Wolf, which is pretty sweet. So I'm going to go with that.
Sure.
He said, just talk about terroir. Well, Tom, we did a whole episode on terroir,
yeah,
buddy. So we're going to need you to rewind. Let me check the feed.
No, I got it. It's 19.
19. It's episode 19, man. It's a successive episode to our Pappy one. So between episode 18 and 19, you should be pretty well, you know, entertained in your car for about a half an hour. So episode 19, Tom, all about terroir. We will just talk about terroir right there for you, buddy.
It's not a type of dog.
You got $20 just for playing. So Tom and Kathleen, the winners of $20 gift cards today.
Absolutely.
Cool, man. Very cool. Jeff, it's always a pleasure. Thanks for coming out to World of Whiskies. It was a good time.
Thank you for having me.
You looked fantastic that night, too.
I try.
The ladies can't see, obviously, because we can't go back in time. But if I were Marty McFly, I'd take us all back just so they could
back
see.
Back in time.
Yes. Like what I did there.
I see what you did
there. I kind of don't, but whatever. Anyway, hey, man, thanks for coming. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks for listening to another edition of Barrel to Bottle. Keep tasting, and we'll see you later.